You're listening to the Sagas in SaaS podcast. This episode features audio from a previously aired live video webcast.
Welcome to Sagas in SaaS Season 4, brought to you by Geek Saga Entertainment. I'm Tara, along with fellow hosts Nick and Jonathan.
This live webcast will cover Shadow, Part 2 of Iron Gold, the fourth installment in Pierce Brown's Red Rising saga, and then it will be split into four podcast episodes, with each covering one of the four POV characters.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at Sagas in SaaS, or email us at sagasandsaas@gmail.com to continue the conversation. Oh, and by the way, as always, the views expressed by the hosts are those of us as individuals and do not necessarily represent the show as a whole.
Last but not least, don't forget to check out our Patreon. With 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month, it offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to the podcast versions of these episodes, as well as timed patron-only access to these live videos, which will only be available to our patrons for the month after they've finished airing. You can find us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Our coverage of part two continues with Lyria's POV chapters.
Luckily for her, Lyria was spirited away from Mars by Kavix, and she is now pretty ensconced in the Telemannus household, where it appears her main job is caring for Sophocles while her nephew Liam is in school at the Citadel 20 kilometers away. And sure, caring for Sophocles doesn't sound like it should be all that hard, but it turns out he's being kind of a brat lately. He keeps killing the pachybel birds that flit around the gardens, and when Lyria has him out for a constitutional, he slips his leash on her. Oddly, as she is running around calling for him, she sees a gray warden and a somewhat familiar-looking copper apparently arguing, and knows that she wasn't supposed to witness whatever she just saw. So the moment she has hold of the fox again, she rushes off, intent on delivering Sophocles' poo to the Telemannus doctor, a yellow named Liago, who is running tests on these samples in hopes of finding out what exactly is, in his words, mangling the fox's wits. Really, though, the phrase fox in a hen house is a thing for a reason. You'd think Sophocles going after these little birds was actually like a normal thing. Now, despite being friendly with Liago and even spending time with her fellow Reds, who also work for the Telemannuses, Lyria is alone when she heads into Hyperion for her day off, and feels even more alone when she sees all the people in the city who went to school and have skills and can work real jobs. I did the finger quotes thing, just in case you're listening. And they can afford things, while all she knows is being a servant. She does try to enjoy herself, even visiting the museum, the very same one that Ephraim broke into not so long ago, but she soon feels overwhelmed in no small part thanks to the museum's Hall of Screams, which, wow, great name for that one. It's an exhibit that is supposed to honor the Reds who died when the Jackal was liquidating mines on Mars. Lyria decides to head for a nearby park to clear her head, but along the way, she brushes past a gold woman who suddenly grabs hold of Lyria and accuses her of stealing her bracelet, a situation that escalates super fast, with Watchmen arriving and immediately agreeing to take Lyria into custody because, you know, she's a Red. But all that's despite the fact that she doesn't have any bracelet on her person and does have second-class clearance as a Telemannus personnel. A crowd begins to gather as the gold woman shouts about the streets being full of savage off-worlders and how Lyria should lose her job. A crowd that soon grows violent, shouting and even throwing things over what they rightfully perceive as a wrongful arrest.
Lyria, for her part, is full of animal fear as she is shoved into the back of a jail wagon with a drugged-out pink and a drunk obsidian. But she's rescued when a gray man arrives and claims that this is all a mistake because she's a friend of his. The gray, who says he used to be a watchman himself before joining the Sons of Ares, talks them into letting Lyria go. Once she's free of the wagon, the watchmen leave and the crowd disperses. And finally, the gray introduces himself to Lyria. His name is Philippe, and when she tries to pay him for helping her, he says that if she's going to insist on that nonsense, he would rather she pay him with her company. They spend the rest of the day eating and drinking and talking. And when Lyria is safe back on the Telemannus estate that night, despite the shitty things that happened that day, she's happy to finally have made a friend. Heart eyes. Not that everything is all peachy from then on out. Like, well, of course not. Even as she is part of the traveling staff of House Telemannus that gets to go with them to Quicksilver's estate for his birthday party, Lyria resents so many of the other people who are there, including the Sovereign and her son, even as she feels guilty for that resentment because of everything Kavix has done for her. Speaking of Kavix, he pings Lyria to collect Sophocles from the birthday banquet, but when Lyria shows up to do so, she first witnesses quite a bit of important conversation between the people who have gathered around Quicksilver's table. For instance, Victra is there, complaining about socialists, while Daxo is having to remind Quicksilver that monopolies are bad, and Virginia is musing about where the twist is in Dancer's attempt to ratify the peace accord with the Ash Lord.
Before Lyria can hear any more than that, they finally take notice of her and Kavix, hands over Sophocles. Once outside, she frees the fox in the garden and sits down to wait for him, thinking she's alone. Only she's not. And it's not just anyone in the garden with her. It's Pax, not a Telemannus. You know, the son of the Sovereign and the Reaper. He knows Lyria as the Fox Walker and asks her to watch a ship race with him. And soon she actually finds herself warming to him. But that feeling doesn't last. As Pax begins questioning her about the mines, he admits that he read her dossier and claims that he wants to understand what things were like, an understanding that Lyria doesn't think he has a right to, because in her mind, how could a gold child, and the first child at that, ever really understand in the first place? So she snaps at him and stomps off, only to have to board the same shuttle as him later. While the Sovereign, aka Mustang, and Victra are apparently off to more meetings elsewhere, Lyria sees Pax bid his mother goodbye and is certain he must have told her what happened, which surely means she will be sacked. But as it turns out, this is the least of her worries, because as their shuttle is en route to Selene Manor, the pendant Lyria has around her neck, a pendant given to her by her friend Philip, begins blinking. And then it opens, emitting a gas that paralyzes everyone in the shuttle before apparently becoming an EMP, because it's always an EMP, y'all. The shuttle plummets from the sky, then suddenly stops for a moment as gravity apparently reverses, before finally crashing into the ground.
Dot, dot, dot. So
fucked up.
Oh, I know. But we'll get to that. First, though... Mm-hmm. Lyria thought Kavix would forget about her as soon as she boarded his ship, but he had actually taken quite a liking to her, which is so fucking cute.
And it's super cute that when Kavix finds out that Lyria can barely read, he declares, "That will not do! Not at all! Stories are the wealth of humanity! My wife would not forgive me if I denied you the key to that wealth." And starts giving her reading lessons, well, until he hears that Darrow has been demoted and murdered Wolfgar and now has, you know, heavier shit to deal with.
That is not a Martian accent.
That is a great impression of Kavix, though. Actually, saying that's not a Martian accent, I think is the only Martian accents we hear them talk about are the low color accents. Like, I think at one point, the gold woman calls out Lyria saying, like, it sounds like she has a mouthful of marbles or something like that, like a rough country accent. Because I've read The Expanse.
They all sound like Texans.
Exactly.
I'm so sorry, Jonathan, that my accent was lacking. I will work on it.
I don't think the accent was lacking at all. I think it was a perfect Kavix, like, just, no, I cannot even. Anyway... It turns out that Lyria is now apparently Sophocles' keeper, and one thing she is tasked with is getting his poop tested, because he's acting weird. And, like, that in and of itself is just hilarious, but her thoughts about the House Telemannus doctor are definitely something. She finds Liago curled over his botany desk like a long length of old ivy. He's an old yellow, maybe 70. People age slower outside the mines. They use cremes on their faces, injections, laser therapy, makes some of them look positively deranged. In the mines, you wear your age proudly. You got white hair? Bloody damn fine for you. Must be quick on your feet. Proud thing, that. And he has bad hearing, and at one point she also teases him by kind of mumbling something rude about him under her breath, and he's like, "What's that?" And she's like, "Oh, no, I just said this." It's really funny, but it's cute because they're clearly kind of friends. He shows her around his lab. Apparently, this isn't the first time either. She knows that he creates whole plants. There's, I believe, a brown servant who he has a thing for, and he, or it might be a pink. I can't remember. It's either a brown servant or a pink. I feel like it's a brown. But he creates flowers just for this one woman who he has a thing for, which is really cute, honestly. He also has just recently created this super poisonous night lily. So, you know, he's not all funny and cute old man.
Lyra is thankful that Iago talks plain to her, which is sweet on both fronts. And you gotta love when he tells her, "You're a proper Martian. I've been here too long, here on this moon. 10 years, only a little back and forth. Everyone's uppity. I bet that's what Lord Kavax sees in you. A breath of home. It's what I like about you as well. So don't you worry if the others don't like you right away. It's their own insecurity at the wretched creatures they've become."
I know later she thinks that, like, oh, Philippe, I've finally found a friend. And I think she's really discounting the fact that he's an old man and everything. But Iago acts like her friend, too. He's very nice to her. Maybe minus the fact when he, like, shoos her away because Sophocles is snarling at the Pachelbel birds again. But
did you find it interesting that Sophocles is like a third or fourth generation clone?
If I had that technology, I absolutely would do that. I would just keep cloning Sebastian.
I remember years ago when Operation Copycat was a success, which was one of the first cloned cats that some woman who had more money than sense paid to try to clone her cat.
But that begs the question. So this Sophocles, he's X-generation clone, and he's been around for a long time. Was he, like, around before Kavix? It sounds like he might have been. Like, he might be older than Kavix is.
He is. I'm 99% sure that it was specifically stated that he had been around for, like, Kavix's father and other generations.
Could you imagine that? Like, I can't imagine my childhood dog still being alive, you know? Anyway, so, yes, it is very interesting that this fox just keeps getting cloned over and over again. And interesting, too, that they're like, maybe they've just stretched him too thin. All that said, though, going back to Lyria. So she goes into the city. Ugh. And when she goes to the museum, I'm assuming both of you have been to the Holocaust Museum in D.C.
Mm-hmm. No, but I have been to the one in Jerusalem.
So the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., I don't know if they still have this exhibit. I would imagine that they do, though, because it was like the most popular exhibit for a billion years, at least as far as I know. The imagery in what is called the Hall of Screams is strong here, only instead of shoes, which is what it is in, or was in the Smithsonian Holocaust Museum. It's a room of shoes that you walk through on, like, a walkway, right? And they're, like, on the floor on either side of you. You cannot touch them or walk on them like this little child is doing, this little gold child is doing in this book. But yeah, the imagery of that hall in the Smithsonian Holocaust Museum is strong. Only instead of shoes, it's these thumb-sized sigils made of flexible metal, just like the ones Lyria still bears. And again, you cannot touch or walk on the shoes in the Holocaust Museum in DC. Somehow you can, and it seems like it's not like the kids, you know, ducked under a railing or something. He's just bah, 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 and his parents are like, oh, let the kid do what he wants. So that's,
I read that differently. I didn't think it was let the kid do what he wants. I thought they were mortified by it, is how I read it.
Oh, no, everybody else was mortified by it. And actually, Nick, if you want to read the quote, because, like, everybody else was mortified by it, the parents were kind of just not even paying attention.
A golden couple with their son is there, and Lyria thinks that despite their somber, respectful expressions, they should slag off, because this exhibit belongs to us, aka Reds. And then the iron tinkles as their son slips from his mother's grasp and walks out onto the sigils. His shoes rattle the sigils together. The sound bounces against the concrete, rising level by level, the noise growing with each ricochet until it reaches the top of the room's cold concrete throat.
After that, though, Lyria is looking at the other low colors in the room, and they're all just kind of like, whoa, what the fuck is happening? And the parents kind of aren't doing anything. So yeah, I don't think they're trying to be disrespectful, but I think that they're just privileged people who don't think about the fact that they're being disrespectful. The main thing is, this is all super overwhelming for Lyria. So she leaves the museum, but again, as she does so, she bumps into a gold woman and is accused of stealing her bracelet. But then she is rescued by a quote-unquote well-meaning gray who saw the whole thing. And I mean, this whole thing is just, I don't know, man. We know what happens after the fact, but without revealing anything or getting too far ahead for obvious reasons, I think that the point here is Lyria didn't even bump into her, really. She just kind of brushed by her. And then the woman's like, my bracelet is missing. Oh my God, it was obviously this child who brushed by me. And the fact that the gold woman is just screaming about it and everybody's like, Lyria did it. The watchmen come and she doesn't even have the bracelet on her. And the woman's like, well, obviously she just had accomplices. And the watchmen in a way are trying to alleviate the situation because they see the crowd gathering and they're trying to like shush the gold woman. And she's just getting like more and more Karen. Like, she's a Karen, right? Like she is Karen times like 500 years, you know what I mean? Of uber privilege and real mad about the fact that now there's all these dirty off-worlders in Hyperion City able to brush by her and maybe steal her bracelet. And oh, it's a lot. The whole thing is maddening. And of course, like the crowd that gathers and the fact that they are getting a little bit rough, like throwing bottles and stuff seems unnecessary. Really, all they need to do is gather and shout and bring attention to the fact that this is a wrongful arrest. But there's obviously been so much of this sort of thing happening on Luna. I feel like they wouldn't have reacted this way if it weren't for the fact that there's probably been many situations like this before. That said, the Watchmen have zero proof that Lyria has done anything, but they're like, oh, we'll take her into custody anyway. And it's only because this gray pops up and convinces the Watchmen to release her that she doesn't continue on the paddy wagon of low color hell. She tries to pay him for his help, but all he wants, if anything, is her companionship. It read to me as a lonely person who saw a low color in trouble, decided to help her. And then he's like, I promise you a splendid day of revelry and fraternity. And she agrees because he's got mischievous eyes. On the whole, I trust those more than I do kind eyes. Those are the ones that pity.
And then Lyria tells her new friend, Philippe, that Dancer was the one who freed her minds and tells him he just wants to make things better here and on Mars. Seems all the Sovereign thinks about is her personal score, finishing things with the Ashlord. And the small people get left behind. She hasn't even been to Mars in 6 years and that place is a quagmire.
He smiles at her use of the word he just taught her and asks, and the Reaper?
Lyria shrugs. I don't know. It's like he's one of them now. I mean, in a gold, and continues, I just want it to end. Just want that life we were all promised.
I forgot to note that minutes before this, Philippe taught her the word quagmire.
Yes, which delightful.
We already know that Lyria is angry with the Sovereign because we saw plenty of that in part one. But it's also interesting that she feels not the same, but also still, you know, negatively about Darrow. Like, he's no longer a red. He's basically a gold now. He's not really helping us. He's not here for us. It's hard to say if she's right or wrong. I think Darrow is really just kind of in his own mind and mindset. I don't think it really has anything to do with him being more gold than red. I think he's just so obsessed with quote unquote ending the war that he doesn't think about literally anyone else. I do love, by the way, though, as we move on with Lyria's chapters, picking out the references that Pierce drops, which I've said over and over again. Although this one, which occurs when the Telemannus valets are being spoiled at Quicksilver's home, including one getting a massage from a robot, is a bit heavy-handed.
Hardy har har. The valet who is getting the massage says, oh gods, yes, robot, that is the spot. And the robot asks, harder, sir. At first, the valet says yes, but then shouts, oh, not that hard. Are you trying to kill me?
To which the robot replies, impossible, sir. The first law of robotics states.
And the valet interrupts, saying, I know what it states, you toaster. As a model of Battlestar Galactica references.
Yes, exactly. I haven't read all of Asimov, and I have not read Asimov in a long time, but every time I read this passage, I'm just like, it's heavy-handed, but it amuses the fuck out of me. It's speaking of them being at Quicksilver's home, Kavix calls for Lyria, and she kind of stumbles into an important conversation. First of all, Victra is there being very much like, murder, murder, murder. She actually suggests that they kill Dancer because politics is such a bore without a little murder. And when another woman speaks, Lyria realizes it's Virginia the Lionheart, and Lyria's heart beats faster. But her years of anger and resentment are compromised by the current sovereign's subtle beauty and the rolling power of her calm voice. Not to mention the fact that she's barefoot, which is an interesting thing that Lyria picks up on. Mustang claims that Dancer is going to take the Senate and Seffi won't meet with her, with Mustang. And that when it comes to a vote, it will be 7-6 and she'll veto it, but it will pit the executive against the legislative. I'm afraid Darrow was right. This is a ploy by the Ashlord to distract us. But Dancer will have to keep his flock of senators from straying, while I just have to mind myself. Who do you think will cave first, me or a few senators? His momentum will run upon the mountain and founder. Dancer is smart enough to know this. So the question that keeps me up at night is, where's the twist? How will he break the impasse? That's a question I would like to know your answer to. But we ain't going to get it anytime soon, because then Kavix is like, oh, Lyria, there you are. Here's my fox. And she brings Sophocles out to the garden to do his business.
Where she runs into Pax, which is a pretty big coincidence. Pax knew she was in the mines because he looked up her dossier when Kavix mentioned her and said she saved his life. And Pax wants to know what the mines are like because his father and grandmother won't tell him much about it. We also get a little aside here where Pax specifically says that his father, Darrow, taught him one of the things that Darrow mentions in like book one, I think, which is how important it is to remember something important about somebody else, no matter what rank they are or anything like that. Not just like a fact that is useful to you, but something that is important to them. And I think it's one of the reasons why Lyria starts to, well, we'll get into that more.
Yeah, it starts to fall a little bit for Pax's,
yeah,
I mean, charm, but it's not fake charm, it's earnest charm, right? Unfortunately, when he asks her to tell him about the mines, she gets angry, particularly when she realizes that if Pax read up on her history, he also knows about her family and believes that he's only paying attention to her because of guilt and pity. And she thinks, who is this little spoiled brat to try to bring my grief back to the light of day just so he can live like a peeping neighbor through my pain? My family didn't die so he could learn a lesson or satisfy his curiosity.
She tries to keep her temper in check, at least until Pax says they keep him in a bubble and he wants to understand.
At which point she goes off about some of the terrible things that happen in the mines, things that they don't show on the HC for all you high colors.
And Pax says he's not a high color. He's a red, too.
Oh, God. He's just a kid. I feel so bad for him here. I know. Feel so bad for him.
This is such a social faux pas, but like, oof.
Yeah, social faux pas, but also I feel bad for him because he's 10. Yeah. And Lyria really loses it. And she's like, the fuck you are. You're just as gold as your da is. And she knows she is hurt Pax, and she just drags Sophocles away. She's tired of people who want to be a part of pain that's not theirs. But she thinks when they're done or bored or too sad, they whisk themselves away, thinking how lucky I am to be me. And then they forget the pain and say, we should be good citizens, get a job, assimilate. They planted us in stones, watered us with pain, and now marvel that we have thorns.
What a great one.
It's a great fucking quote. That quote is so great. But also, I do want to dig into this conversation a little bit because he's a little kid. And yes, he's raised with a group of kids of different colors, but they're all being raised in extreme privilege. And he just doesn't know what he's saying. None of it is really his fault, per se. I mean, Mustang makes him sit in on all these political chats, like the public ones, and I think even some of the private ones. He resents it because he's like, oh, God, I had to listen to that asshole. I don't think he says asshole, but he swears. he's both a part of things and not. And Lyria is rightfully so jaded by everything that she's been through that all she sees is this privileged little kid, this first child of the Republic, literally being like, I want to understand. I'm a red too. And it's like, I mean, dude, at best, you're like a tiny percentage of red. Clearly, he has red in him because they talk about his eyes being like rose gold at some point. I don't know if it's in this part or later. And he's also small, smaller than Electra even. And Sevro is literally half red and he's small. So there's definitely some of that in him. But dude, you're the first child of the Republic. Your father is the Reaper. Your mother is the Sovereign. The children that you are raised with, no matter where they came from, you're all being raised in like the richest private school that's ever existed in your little group of nine. I think Pax is a really good kid and means well. And I wish Lyria hadn't responded to him this way, but I also understand why she did.
It's interesting to juxtapose the upbringing of Pax versus Serafina and how they are brought up on the rim without that privilege.
No, but that's the thing. Not even necessarily, because they don't have the option of having slaves on the rim until they have a Peerless Scar. But there are no slaves in the Republic anymore. There are servants.
Correct. But whether you have slaves or servants or whatever you in the rim, they don't get to have any of that. They have to basically fend for themselves when they're young. So
I think that would have been an interesting thing for Mustang to take from the rim, honestly, is that they don't even get servants. But the thing is, we don't know that. We don't actually get any of those details. All we know is they're being taught, but how much of it can really be separated from the fact that they're still living in Selene Manor and still have everything, all the best things that the world can give them. And I'm not shitting on Pax for that, but like I said, I really think he is earnest and wants to understand and know these things. And while I understand why they wouldn't want to talk about it, I agree with Pax that they should be talking with him about it. That said, it's understandable that Lyria gets upset the way she does. She's also very young and
it's all just really unfortunate.
Yeah. And especially when she has to board the same like shuttle as him and she's like, oh my God, I know he's told his mom I'm going to be sacked. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is Pax probably didn't tell his mom. You can actually kind of tell Lyria watches Pax say goodbye to his mom and then Pax is clearly upset and Mustang's like, what's wrong? And he's like, nothing, leave me alone. But then they board the shuttle and they're on their way to Selene Manor. And then somebody's like, what's that thing glowing? And it's the pendant that Philippe gave her. And it turns into a thing that has gas and also an EMP inside it. Because again, it's always an EMP, you guys. It's fucking always. Like, when will they learn? Or actually, I guess they'll never learn because an EMP is always going to be the thing that takes something down.
Well, except that you'd think they build devices that weren't immune to them.
Not that Lyria, despite her anger with Pax and everything, would have wanted what happens on their trip back home from Quicksilver's party to happen. Again, when the pendant that Philippe gave her turns out to contain some sort of gas and an EMP, and then the ship plummets from the sky. But all of that said,
that's where we leave her for now. Stay tuned for our next podcast episode, which will cover Ephraim's chapters. Thank you for listening to the Sagas and Sass podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Sagas and Sass.